Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hello, welcome to Cubs PS Plus, a Northside Numbers game, a weekly podcast that dives headfirst into the analysis of hot topics driving Chicago Cubs baseball. I'm your host, Mike Waller, a lifelong Cub fan, full-time baseball stat nerd, and sometime youth baseball coach. Cubs PS Plus is part of the Bleacher Bunch Productions on the Fans First Sports Network, joining great shows like the Sun Ranto Show, Cup of Cubby Blue, and Baseball Rabbit Hole. The Bleacher Bunch feed is available wherever it is you get your podcasts, and Cubs PS Plus is always available ad-free to Patreon supporters at patreon.com/CubsPSPlus, where you can support the show, help make all this magic happen, and find a variety of benefits for as little as a dollar a month. In addition to the podcast feeds, you can also find me on Twitter or X, Instagram, TikTok, Threads, Blue Sky, and YouTube, all at Cubs PS Plus, a spin on the baseball metric OPS Plus. Love the pod or hate it? Please drop a review wherever you find your podcasts. If you've done that, thank you so much. Maybe you can share an episode with a friend. It's May 7th, 2024. The Cubs are 21-15. Justin Steele is back, and there's a lot to talk about. Are you ready? I'm ready. Here we go. Welcome into episode 77, the Clint Frazier episode of this podcast. This week, I want to talk through how this team has been treading water through a variety of injuries and highlight the obvious problem areas and how things are likely to change as people come back from injury, like Justin Steele did last night. Included in this, I also want to take a deeper look at Javier Assad and why he continues to be quite good, in spite of kind of a general consensus view that he's just bound to regress. I don't think that's going to happen. We'll get into why. So where are the Cubs right now? The Cubs are 21-15. I tweeted earlier this week, they've been kind of bouncing back and forth between 5 and 7 games over 500, which is not maybe the ideal place to be. They've definitely had a lot of games that they could have won had things gone differently, had the team hit more, had the bullpen come through a little bit more. But this team is also well ahead of last year. Last year, this team famously had a 14-13 April, which was okay. Then they had a disastrous 10-18 May. And started June slowly before playing really at like a 95 win pace for about 3 months until they ran out of gas in September. And there are reasons to be a little bit worried about this team. Yeah, the bullpen continues to not come together. Now, preface this by saying bullpens are often very much a work in progress early in seasons. You have a new mix of guys. You've got some kids coming up for the first time. You have people in new roles. Guys have transitioned out, transitioned in. And it takes time. Craig Counsell has said as much. Craig Counsell has a lot of experience with a lot of really good bullpens in Milwaukee. This one is coming together slowly. And really, it's kind of a mixed bag. I mean, the one guy out of the bullpen that so far this year I would 100% trust is Mark Leiter Jr., which is a little ironic since I basically spent 2 years talking about how he might be the next one cut by the Cubs. And this kind of feeds the Javier Assad question. Like, there were a lot of things looking at Mark Leiter Jr. that made me just question whether success he was having was real or whether it was just kind of flukish and eventually they'd figure it out and then he would go back to being kind of the mediocre pitcher he had been before. Now, in Assad's case, the mediocre pitcher he was before doesn't really apply because he's a younger guy. But there's still that eyeball test, that trust factor. And obviously what changed with Mark Leiter Jr. is he went from being vaguely passable bounce around the league journeyman starter slash long reliever to a guy who has a really, really, really nasty split. And he's really focused on that split and exploited it to the max. And that's made him a really good short inning reliever. So he's been really good this year for the Cubs. And we go to everybody else in the bullpen. I would say that I don't have major issues with Hector Neris. Now, he's off to a rough start. He's not commanding the strike zone the way he needs to command the strike zone. He, like Leiter, has a nasty split finger. And when he's around the zone, when he's he typically doesn't throw the splitter in the zone. He will occasionally, but for the most part, he's looking for chase on that splitter. And same with Mark Leiter Jr. If Nariz is controlling the fastball, if he's getting ahead on the fastball, if he's keeping the split near the strike zone, but you know, just low, just into a lefty, just low away to a righty, that type of thing, then he's really effective. He gets a lot of swing and miss, gets a lot of chase, gets a lot of weak contact. You know, guys will chase that pitch out of the zone. They might make contact with it, but when it's, you know, when the bottom's falling out of it and it's coming through under the strike zone, you get a bat on it, you're basically going to beat that into the ground. And that's where Mark Leiter Jr. gets a lot of ground balls for double plays, things like that. And it's really the same with Nariz. But Nariz has been a little bit more erratic with his command so far early this year. And so with that lack of command, if he's not commanding the strike zone, if he's all over the place spraying balls, nobody's going to chase the split. And that's where Nariz has gotten himself into some trouble this year. Now, on the whole, I think he's been okay. He's getting better. And since he's been put in at closer for Adbert, he's been successful in his saves. They've all been, not all. He did have one really clean one where he looked really good. But for the most part, they've been kind of heart attack inducing, and maybe that's just what we're going to have to live with for a while. But on the whole, I think he's going to be fine. He's got a good long track record, and you know, it's stuff he's always handled. And when you look at the numbers, so I'll go to Mark Leiter Jr. He's got an 0.59 ERA. You know, he's getting 10 strikeouts per nine innings. And you go to Nariz, he's got a 3.46 ERA, 8.3 Ks per nine. On the whole, I think they're, you know, those are probably the two best relievers, maybe with Yency Almonte joining them. Yency got off to a slow start, his first couple outings were pretty rough, but he's really settled it down since then. He's been reliable lately. He's got a 3.68 ERA, tick over 12 strikeouts per 10 innings, and you know, there's a lot to like there. And with this bullpen, I've talked about it before, but one of the things we saw early and continue to see with some of the people is that it's not so much that the bullpen is flat out awful and can't pitch, or you know, purely can't get outs. It's that they're not being efficient. They're not being at their best when they need to be. So when you have a dirty inning situation, so maybe it's the sixth inning, you've got a starter who pitched five, gets an out in the sixth, walks a guy, maybe there's a base hit, whatever, a couple guys on base, a one run game, and you got to go to the pen. You need a guy who's going to come in, throw in strikes, get you out of that jam, and then move it on. You know, a lot of guys can handle a clean inning. You come in, you got a lead, nobody's on base. You can give up a hit or a walk or even a couple, you know, put some guys on base, but then you've still got the three outs to play with. And oftentimes you can get three outs without the other team scoring runs. But too often in these scenarios, the relievers have come in, you know, base is loaded, two guys on, whatever, walk a guy, hit a guy, give up a hit, give up a couple hits. All of a sudden, you know, two, three runs have come in. Then the reliever locks in. Then they finish that inning. They pitch another one clean. But the damage is done. And so right now, when it comes to a dirty inning, like Mark Leiter Jr. is, and Almonte, to some extent, he's been a lot better lately. Those are the two guys I kind of trust coming into a dirty inning. Mark Leiter Jr. has done it so many times. And that's one of the reasons why when people talk about who should close. Now, I assume at this point we are going to see the Cubs add relievers as we approach the deadline. Typically, teams don't do a lot of major trades this early in the season. That said, the Marlins did trade Luis Arraez to the Padres a couple days ago. So I guess the Marlins are open for business. There's just not much of a market established. You know, a team doesn't know how valuable their relief pitcher is until they've got calls from three, four, five teams asking about that person. You can start to stack offers against each other. Right now, there's not a lot of market because not many teams are trading. I'm sure Jed's on the phone. If he's not, he should be. This bullpen clearly needs help. There are also things, though, where a different mix of the same guys. We saw it last year. One of the reasons why the Cubs got off to the bad start, had the atrocious May, was the bullpen was dreadful. Michael Fulmer came in as the closer. He was not getting it done early. Had to step back to low-leverage situations like Adbert's doing right now. And then over time, some other guys stepped up. Adbert stepped up, you know, for all the struggles right now and for as non-confident and non-competitive as he looks sometimes. He was really good last season. I mean, he had converted 22 of 25 save opportunities. He had to pitch well to get into the closer role to begin with. Like, he had a really good season, was a really high-end reliever. I'll stop short of saying he was elite, but he was very good. If we could have last year's version of Adbert, whether he's closing or not, I'm in. Like, that's a good pitcher. And as Adbert came into that role, that allowed everybody else to slot back. So they had Julian Merriweather, got off to... It was a rough start, but it was really his first two outings, so that kind of poisoned fans for a few weeks. But, you know, he sort of settled into that seventh, eighth inning, come in, get guys out, whatever. He could get out of a dirty inning. And then Fulmer, once he kind of rebounded from the low leverage stuff, he came back and was a good leverage reliever. And then Mark Leiter Jr. was doing his thing last year, too. And this year, the Cubs have just struggled. Like, they've had, at times, Luke Little has looked really good. At other times, he's been a complete mess. Same with Daniel Palencia. I mean, he was... You know, in the Mets series, he pitched two innings in an extra inning loss. And the first inning, he was absolutely nails. He was really good. And then the second inning, I wouldn't even say he was awful, but he came in and hit a guy, which set up a force play. So actually hitting a guy in extra innings with the Manfred man, zombie runner, ghost guy, whatever you want to call it, on second base. Hitting a guy is not the worst thing in the world, except that his big weakness is being erratic with command. So he starts spraying the ball around, hitting guys. That's not going to go well. He did wind up losing that game, but then against the Brewers, he had a really good ninth inning in their win on Sunday. But he came in last night pitching on back-to-back days, and that did not go well at all. I mean, he was a little bit erratic, but then he had a lot of middle miss. And it really kind of shows that even... if you throw 100 miles an hour, and he wasn't hitting the 101 he was hitting the day before, which, you know, you pitch multiple days in a row, you're going to lose some of that velo. But no matter how hard you throw, if you're hitting middle against against major league hitters, they're going to do some damage. And that wound up being, he didn't give up all the runs. Richard Lovelady had already put guys on base and all that. So they weren't all charged to Palencia, but he did not pitch well, and that did not go well. But again, he's young. He's only been a relief pitcher for right about a calendar year. It was in May last year that they converted him in the minors from a starter to a reliever. And he continues to be a work in progress. And he's young, and I think he'll get there, but you know, he's been a struggle. Richard Lovelady is a guy. I'll lump up Lovelady with Colton Brewer. So those are two guys that the Cubs signed to minor league contracts. They had them in spring training as non-roster invitees. They both showed some things. Neither one made the opening day roster and went to Iowa, but they both pitched reasonably well. And they've been called up recently. And they're not prospects. They're not particularly young. They're not highly regarded prospects. They've bounced around the league. So they're not guys that the Cubs have a lot of money invested in, a lot of money, time, effort, whatever. They're up. And now, Richard Lovelady is a little bit different. He does have an option, so he could get sent back down to Iowa. So he could have a little struggle, send him down, keep him available. But Colton Brewer does not. So Colton is going to pitch until he either pitches his way into a role, or they need the roster spot, or he pitches himself out of a role. And if and when the latter two come, he will be designated for assignment and let go, unless if he clears waivers, he might agree to come back to the Cubs on a minor league contract and go to Iowa. But those guys right now, Lovelady was rough yesterday, although, you know, he did give up some tough luck. I mean, he gave up a, you know, 78 mile an hour duck snort bloop single, and then he gave up a weak ground ball that was just happened to be deep in the hole, so Dansby couldn't make a play. After stolen bases, the infield comes in, and then he gets a ground ball that would typically be some kind of out, but he gets it through the drawn-in infield, you know, two-run score. That was his day. So it was not a great day for him, but he also did not pitch as poorly as the numbers might indicate. But then you go through it, and other guys that have been in the bullpen, Adbert Alzolay has been a total train wreck. I mean, he's blown five saves. He's given up five home runs. All but one of the blown saves involves giving up home runs. The last one against Milwaukee last Friday, he didn't give up any home runs, didn't even give up a lot of hard contact, but it's just he's just not being effective. He's not getting the outs he typically does. One of the issues with him at closer is he doesn't get a lot of swing and miss. So if you look at Adbert's numbers, you know, he's striking out about 7 per 9 innings, and that's one of the lower numbers on the team. I mean, he's not very far ahead of Kyle Hendricks or Jameson Taillon, who are known for not being big strikeout guys, right there with Javier Assad, who's also known as not a big strikeout guy, Justin Steele. But those are starting pitchers. So he, and Adbert was a starting pitcher for a long time, but the injuries piled up, kind of prevented him from being a starting pitcher. And so now he's a short or long inning reliever. And that's how it's going to go. And he's just going to figure it out. I mean, the issue with him right now is he does not have options. He cannot go to Iowa to go work it out. So the only options are to keep him in the bullpen and find work for him until sufficient time has passed that you either decide we just have to cut ties or that he figures something out. The other option is if there's something wrong with him physically, go on the injured list. Otherwise, you got to designate for assignment and move on. I don't think anybody is at that point yet. Well, some fans are, but some fans say a lot of things. Adbert's still young. He's been pretty much, he's never really been a bad major league pitcher. He's had injury issues, things like that, but he is not, this is his first really, you know, like bad start to a season. Mostly he's been hurt and coming up through the minors. But the challenge right now is because of all those injuries in the past, because wasn't able to break up to the big leagues earlier than, you know, he has to date. You know, a lot of those years they had to option him back to Iowa, and that uses up those 3 option years. So now at this point, you have an 8-man bullpen under today's rules. And with an 8-man bullpen, playing the games they're playing, especially so far this season, the starters have not consistently gone deep, although that has been changing lately, which is great. It's really hard to hide a guy with an 8-man bullpen. So if he's going to be on the roster, he's going to have to pitch. And now nights like he pitched an inning last night, that was a good time to get him in. Cubs are down 6-3 against the Padres. They would wind up losing 6-3. But he was able to come in, get through an inning, scoreless. There was a little bit of noise on the bases, but you know, he picked a guy off, had another walk, you know, so he's still working through it, but those are the kinds of outings he's going to need. Unfortunately, it also means that you can't always just hold him for those low leverage situations. If you play a run of close games, just like him getting in the game on Friday, it was a, if I remember, it was a 1-1 tie. No, it was a 1-0 game. Cubs had a 1-0 lead going into the, I think it was the 6th inning that day when they brought him in. Maybe it was the 7th. I'm blanking on the innings. But it was late in the game. Maybe ideally right now, you wouldn't go to Adbert in that spot. You would want to go to somebody else. But they had 3 or 4 guys down. I'd have to go back and look at the box scores. But several guys had pitched multiple days in a row. And there just weren't guys available for that spot. Now, flipping it around, maybe the way we know he's throwing now, maybe you'd go Colton Brewer instead of Adbert Alzolay. But the point was, in that game, it was a leverage situation against a good team later in a ball game with a small lead, and you got to go to somebody. And with 8 men in the bullpen, 3 or 4 guys down and unavailable, your options are just limited. So guys are just going to have to step up and figure it out, and Adbert's one of those guys. So I don't think he's going to get sent down. It's pretty clear. I think if he had anything they could spin as an injury, I think they would have done it. I think he'd be on the IL now. So I think we'll just have to see how it goes. A couple other guys to talk about. Jose Kwas, classic example I talked about earlier, coming into a game, not being sharp, giving up some walks, some hits, whatever. And then once the damage is done, figuring it out and being solid. That's really what he had done in the bigs before he got sent down. Now, his minor league numbers so far are a lot better than they were, so I think he's figuring the command out. My guess is, since he has not come back up, they're probably working on something mechanically with him or doing something with his pitch mix to try to get him set going forward, because I think we've seen the results of AAA, that things are improving. And really, with a guy like Kwas, it's really less about the results and, you know, whether or not he can get AAA hitters out, because clearly he can. He has so much movement. Him and Almonte both have ridiculous amounts of movement on their sliders, good fastballs, but both of them get in big trouble if they're not locating. And that's where Almonte's cleaned that up lately, and Kwas had struggled and went down. So with the Cubs, whatever they're doing with him, they want to get him in a position where that work, that effort is more consistent. Keegan Thompson's another one. He just went down yesterday to allow Steele to be activated. I could have flipped a coin with him or Palencia or potentially Lovelady, although Lovelady's the one lefty in the pen now with Drew Smyly on the injured list. Keegan has shown signs of being the 2022 Keegan Thompson that we all love so much. And if we can get that guy back, that would be a huge, massive lift for this bullpen. His last outing, he was not good on Saturday, I think. But he had been pretty good before then. Right now it's a numbers game. Guys are going to go up and down. That's how the whole Des Moines to Chicago shuttle works during the offseason in the bullpen, or during the middle of the season in the bullpen. He's a guy we'll see back. I mean, on the whole, his numbers, he's got a 3.38 ERA, striking out almost 12 batters per nine. He's not walking a lot of guys. He's got one of the lower walk rates on the team, which is good. Where he gets himself in trouble is if he just leaves too much over the middle of the plate, and that's plagued a lot of guys. The Cubs need Julian Merriweather back. I think so. His injury was, you know, like a cracked rib in his back and more like a stress fracture kind of thing. It was going to be a month of pure rest, no baseball activity, no, not much physical activity at all. And then he was going to need another month to ramp up. And he's really right about that halfway point. I would probably be paying attention over the next week and see if we hear much in the way of updates on Merriweather. And they had projected that to be about an 8-week injury, which would put it about like 56 days from the day they put him on the IL, if you could go strictly by exact week counts. But they put him on the 60-day injured list. So 60 days, I think he's eligible to come off the injured list June 8th. Now, 60-day, it doesn't mean he's going to be ready on June 8th, June 9th. But hopefully he's ready by early, mid-June to come back, because that would be a really big arm to get back in this bullpen. He looked really good early in the season before getting hurt. He was striking out 11.5 per nine innings. He had a 1.93 ERA, 2.50 FIP. I mean, he was just... He was probably that arm that could have been the linchpin to kind of help hold all this together. Like, he probably would have been the next in-at closer for Adbert, which takes some pressure off Nerys, which takes some pressure off Leiter. One of the things I'm a little bit worried about with Leiter is one of the things that happened last year with the bullpen is because they had to play at such a clip for so long to get back into the race and put themselves in position for the playoffs, they had to overuse a bunch of guys. They were really relying on four guys last year in the bullpen. It was mostly Adbert, Fulmer, Merriweather, and Leiter Jr. And so they had to make a ton of appearances. They all made, pretty sure all of them made career highs. Fulmer might have had one previous year with more appearances. And that really showed up late in the season when they really faded down the stretch. And Mark Leiter Jr. has already thrown 15 innings in 16 appearances, and they've played 36 games. So, and he's been down a little bit lately. He has not pitched quite as often the last four or five games, but he's been pitching in like almost half their games. That would put him on pace for, you know, like 80 appearances. And I think last year he had 70, and that was a career high. Let me bring that up real quick. Yeah, last year he pitched 64 innings in 69 appearances, and, you know, his numbers, 3.50 ERA, almost 11 Ks per nine, which lines up pretty well with what he's doing now. I mean, the Ks per nine is pretty much in line. He's got a much better ERA now, but he's not going to keep an 0.59 ERA for the entire season. There'll be some days where he doesn't have the split and he gets hit a little bit, but you know, they just need that one or two pieces to pull it together. So the question is, like, where's that going to come from? There's not much of a trade market yet. I think Jed will eventually make trades and bring some guys in, maybe even a big closer, potentially. But what can the Cubs do between now and, say, like late June? You know, so you got 6-8 weeks before probably significant trades or multiple trades are possible. You might find a team like the Marlins to make a deal with right now. But for the most part, you're not going to be able to go just remake your bullpen via trade in May. Most teams aren't dealing. A lot of teams, there are a few teams out of the race, but even the A's are surprisingly good this year. And I still hear a lot of chatter online about Miller from the A's or Class A from the Guardians, I'll be shocked if either one of those are traded. One, both teams are surprisingly good. The Guardians lead the Central right now and have one of the better records in baseball. The A's are surprisingly competitive. I don't think there's any chance they're going to contend, but they're off to enough of a start that I doubt they're going to sell off pieces, certainly this early. But then you also look at their contracts. So Class A is signed for this year plus three more at $4 million a year. So this guy is a top-level closer. I think most people would agree with that. And the Guardians have him for $4 million a year for multiple seasons. I mean, unless they see some big overpay coming in return, or there's some really, really valuable guy they absolutely covet and would want to get, why would they trade that? I know they're always looking to save money, but you're not going to get better performance for $4 million a year than they're getting from Class A right now. And Miller is still under, he's not even arbitration eligible until 2027, and he's not a free agent until 2030. So you take the A's, who are notoriously cheap, and they trade guys as they're getting more expensive. He doesn't even start getting expensive for three more years. Like, that's a league minimum performer. So why would they deal that? I mean, the Cubs would have to give up just an insane haul. Plus, I think the A's still see Miller as a starter, so they're certainly not going to trade him for reliever value at this point. So I think those two are probably off the table, but who knows? I've heard some chatter about the Cubs talking to the Marlins, and maybe Tanner Scott's a possibility. Now, Tanner Scott is not an elite closer, but he'd be a nice arm to add to this bullpen. So we'll see what they can get. But over the next 8 weeks, let's set trades aside, because I don't know that there's much of a market. So they're really looking from within, or they're looking at guys who are just available kind of off the streets today. And so that limits the options. That means probably need to get guys to lock into a role. One thing that is coming, though, so the Cubs have had a ton of injuries. They've had, you know, Jameson Taillon missed his first probably three or four starts. He didn't start the year on time. He's been pitching really well since. Justin Steele gets hurt opening day. Didn't come back until last night, where he looked really good, but was obviously on a pitch count after missing 5 weeks. Kyle Hendricks has been rough, but he's been hurt. Jordan Wicks has been on the injured list with some forearm pain. It sounds like he's doing okay. He's back to doing some long toss, so hopefully he'll be back on the mound soon. And Drew Smyly's been hurt, which takes a lefty out of their bullpen. That said, the starting pitching has been absolutely amazing. The Cubs are like fourth in the league in starting pitcher ERA, and that's while carrying Kyle Hendricks' ERA of 12. So, you know, Steele's been good when he's in there. Shota Imanaga has been just a revelation. He's 0.78 ERA, 34 and two-thirds innings. He's got 35 strikeouts. He's walked four guys. I mean, he has more wins than walks. And it's, so those guys have carried. Jameson Taillon has come back and been very good. He's made four starts now. He's 3-0 with a 1.13 ERA. He's given up, you know, 16 hits and five walks in 21 innings. So whip right at one, struck out 16, which is pretty solid for him. And so they've been good. Wicks was good. The only issue with Wicks before he got hurt was, and he was definitely better his last start, maybe his last two. He was not being efficient with his pitches. He was having too many innings, especially early in games, where he was not getting that arm through. He was having arm side misses, especially high and into lefties. And it just set up a lot of big pitch count innings early in games, which meant he was only able to get through four and two thirds, maybe five, versus getting, you know, through five innings into the sixth, maybe getting through six into the seventh, which makes a massive difference on the bullpen. Long term, I think he's gonna be fine. He's got a 4.70 ERA, 23 innings. He's given up 26 hits, nine walks, and a lot of that has come in those first couple innings. Once he settles in, he's been quite good. And then let's talk Javier Assad. Well, I want to talk about Javier Assad, but let's get through this as it relates to the bullpen. Javier Assad's been sensational. He's been, ever since he first came up, you know, he was this kind of chunky guy that wore these goofy glasses when I first saw him in 2022. I knew he had a good season at Iowa, but when you look back through his history, like, his history's not that amazing. We'll get into it. But he's been really, really good. Seven starts, he's 3-0 with a 1.66 ERA. 38 innings, you know, he's given up 27 hits and 12 walks. So, you know, he's keeping that whip down this year, which is great. He's got 31 strikeouts, which is trending up a little bit for his career, but he's been really effective. And then we have Ben Brown and Hayden Wisniewski have stepped in. And, you know, Ben Brown's ERA is still a little thrown off. It's a 4.23, but he's been much better than that. He got lit up his major league debut, and they brought him up in Texas. I think it was the second game of the season, second or third game of the season. And they brought him in a relief role, and Texas just absolutely destroyed him that day. But he's been really good since. He's been good as a starter. Albeit, again, still kind of with some of the efficiency. He had one start that he went seven innings or went into the seventh. I mean, look at bring up his game logs. Yeah, so his first day he came up, the major league debut, he went 1 2/3 innings against Texas, gave up 5 hits, 2 walks, gave up 6 earned runs. I mean, he just got jumped. But then he threw 4 innings, gave up 1 run against Colorado, got a start against San Diego, went 4 2/3, gave up no runs. I think that was his first start. I think the Colorado may have been out of the bullpen. No, I think they were both starts. No, Colorado's out of the bullpen. San Diego was his first start. Then in Arizona, he went 6 innings, gave up 1 run. And then since then, he's been kind of in and out of the bullpen. He did have a start in Boston. That was a game they lost 17-0. He wasn't great. He pitched 3 2/3 innings, gave up 3 runs, 7 hits, no walks, 4 Ks. That was just not a good day for the Cubs, but he would not be their worst pitcher that day. So there's that. Against the Mets, he was pretty good. He only got 4 2/3. Again, for him, it's about being efficient with pitches. In that game against the Mets, he walked 5, gave up 3 hits. You walk 5, strike out 5, you're running up some big pitch counts, and that's going to make it hard for you to extend in games. But now that they're some of these guys are coming back. So Steele came back, Keegan Thompson goes to the minor leagues, and now Ben Brown is in the bullpen. He's got a great fastball and a good curveball. And the two of them play really well together. And that we'll see what it does for him as a starting pitcher. Guys can succeed on 2 pitches. Justin Steele does. Other guys have. He has a really good fastball curveball combo. But that has always played very well at the back end of bullpens. And, you know, especially when he's able to shorten up and go, you know, he's consistently upper 90s when he's starting. But when he's relieving, he's able to go a little bit more concentrated and get a little bit more, you know, 97 to 99 on the fastball versus maybe more being like 95 to 97 because you got to stretch it out and make it go 5-6 innings. I think he's going to be a really valuable addition to this pen. That's another guy who doesn't have a lot of experience in terms of being a shutdown guy at the back end of the bullpen. So I'm not going to throw him like right in a closer. I might even ease him into dirty innings. Like that's a skill that, you know, takes time. But you bring him in 1 or 2 run lead, 7th, 8th inning, I would not have a lot of worries about that right now. And so the next starter back, I don't know if Wicks or Hendricks will come back first. Hendricks is going to start tonight. It'll be a second rehab start. He had one in Tennessee last week. He's going to start for the Iowa Cubs tonight. We'll see how that goes. He may be back soon. And Jordan Wicks hasn't been out as long, so he may not need a rehab stint. So I don't know if he'll proceed and be able to get back before Hendricks. Whoever the next one back is, probably knocks Hayden Wisniewski out of the rotation. Hayden's been great since he came back up. He started the year, stretched out in Iowa as a starter, and came up. He pitched very first day up. You know, his roommate Mervis has to wake him up to tell him he's getting called up to Iowa. He leaves at like 1 a.m, has flight delays, whatever. He gets to Arizona, on no sleep, and starts and goes 4 innings, and it just nails. It's like 4 scoreless innings. And he's been really good. His last start was his best start. He started against Milwaukee on 3rd. He went 6 1/3, scoreless, 3 hits, 2 walks, 8 Ks. Unfortunately, that was also the day that Adbert came in and blew up, and the Cubs wound up losing 3-1. But he's looked really, really good. He's going to stay in the rotation until either Wicks or Hendricks come back. And the Cubs haven't made this announcement, so this is just my own assumption, but I'm guessing he's going to be the next one out of the rotation. But he's also a guy who has had success last year, especially out of the bullpen. He can go back and forth. He can throw multiple innings. He can also come in. And he's another guy like Ben Brown. Like, he throws pretty hard. When he's starting a game, he's probably living more like 95, 96. But if he's coming in for 1 inning, 2 max, he can run that up to, I've seen him pump 98, 99 before. So he can get up there. He's got that nasty slider. he's pitching with a lot of confidence right now. And whoever comes back next, Hendricks or Wicks, when they get into that, put Wesneski back into the bullpen. Now all of a sudden you look at arms you can trust, and you know, probably going to keep Nerys on the back end for now. Mark Leiter Jr. is 100% in the circle of trust right now. Yency Almonte is throwing really well. You start adding Ben Brown, Hayden Wesneski to that mix. You know, Colton Brewer and Lovelady are okay-ish. Maybe they stick, maybe they don't. Pushes Palencia down to lower leverage. Maybe at some point he changes places with Keegan Thompson and Keegan comes back up and Palencia goes down. But it, and then that allows you to push Adbert to a little bit less leverage until he's able to show that he can do more. You know, the other thing with Brown and Wesneski in the bullpen is those are those multi-inning guys. They can come in if a starter is short, if I don't know, Wicks comes back or Hendricks comes back and they're on a pitch count for their first start back, or they don't quite have it. They're up at 75 pitches through four innings and you got to go to the pen. You don't necessarily have to stack up five guys to throw that day. You can go to Brown or you can go to Wesneski, and they might be able to bridge you to the eighth or ninth inning. Come in and just get outs. Go throw three or four. And the nice thing about having two of them available to do that, I don't think you want them both to do it all the time, although it would kind of help keep them stretched out because inevitably there are going to be more injuries. They'll have to make spot starts, things like that. Is, you know, if you only have one of those guys in your bullpen, and let's say Kyle Hendricks is getting a lot of obvious attention right now. Like, is he done? Is he cooked? Is his career over? I don't necessarily think so yet. His stuff is still, if you go look at the models on StatCast and look at pitch movement profiles, velos, things like that, his stuff actually lines up really well with what he threw last year. He's getting the same movement. He's getting the same velocity. He's just not locating. And we've seen Kyle Hendricks fix command before, so I'm hopeful he can do it again. But there's probably no scenario where he doesn't at least get 3 to 4 more starts easily before they take other action. So let's say he comes back and still struggles. He's probably going to get 3 or 4 starts. If they only have one guy in the bullpen who can go long relief, then you're basically tying him to Kyle Hendricks for some foreseeable future. Well, with Brown and Wesneski, you have two. So you may be able to get that out of some other guys too. We've seen Daniel Palencia go 3 innings actually. But with Brown and Wesneski, you've got two guys you can do. So you could do that twice in a week. Because unfortunately, once a guy throws 3-4 innings in relief, I mean, they're going to be down almost like a starter. They're going to be down for 3 to 5 days, depending on how many pitches they threw. But having the two gives so much more versatility. Plus, they're both, I think, going to show that they're able to work out of a jam, be good in late leverage innings, things like that. And as we saw last year, if one or two pieces click, if Nerys is able to settle in as, you know, the closer, or Almonte and Leiter become the seventh, eighth inning guys, which I think they probably more or less already are. But you add like one more to that mix, now you've got somebody pretty consistently. You can start the sixth, get to the seventh, mix and match, because they also, those guys can't pitch every day, and the Cubs are playing a lot of close games. You just need those options every day. So the more of them you have, the better. Now down at Iowa, we've talked about it before. We've got Carl Edwards Jr. has not come up yet. Sam McWilliams, Thomas Pannone, Jose Quas is down there. Riley Thompson is throwing really well as reliever this year. So there are still options at Iowa to potentially come up and work it out. And one guy that I'd love to see is Cam Sanders. But as of last time I looked, which is probably a couple appearances ago at this point, he had walked 18 guys in 11 innings. Like, that's not going to get you the call up. So with the rotation, one of the reasons why I think it's Wesneski and, well, Brown and Wesneski, the first two out of the pen coming back, is the way Javier Assad's been pitching. And when both Kyle Hendricks and Jordan Wicks are back, it's going to make for a really interesting discussion, because Justin Steele is locked in. As long as he's healthy, he's the ace. He's the big dog. Shota Imanaga is absolutely lights out, and Jameson Taillon is throwing well. And all three of those guys, because of their status or their stature or the contract they just signed, like, they're going to be starting pitchers on this team. After that, the Cubs have shown a lot of depth, which is a really good problem to have. And they've also shown that there's not a huge amount of difference necessarily between Brown, Wisniewski, Wicks, Assad, and, you know, eventually Kate Horton. He's made his AAA debut. That was a little bit rough, but he still got through it. The stuff looked pretty good. So I'm sure he's not in any rush to come up. Certainly the Cubs are not desperate for starting pitching right now. But when Hendricks and Wicks are both back, it's going to make for an interesting discussion, because Javier Assad is pitching in a way that deserves to stay in the rotation. Like, he is not there. He's probably their number two starter right now. And some of that changes with Steele back. You know, it's been Shota and Assad kind of leading the way. But he has also shown in the past that he does really well flipping in and out of the bullpen, spot starting, long relief. He's thrown some leverage innings. Whatever it is you need, the dude gets outs. So let's talk about Javier Assad. I mean, he grew up in Tijuana. He actually played Little League with former Cub Alfonso Rivas. One thing that was cool the other day, he started on Cinco de Mayo, and he was the first Mexican-born pitcher to ever start on Cinco de Mayo for the Cubs, which is kind of cool. But when you look back through his history, now, he was signed in 2015 as an international free agent signing when he was born in 97, so he would have been 18. And 17, 18. And he was never, I think he made some top 30 lists, but he was never like a top 10 Cubs prospect. He was not somebody that, like, just wait till this guy hits the bigs. Got off to a quick start, had a good season in rookie ball in 2016. After that, you know, it's kind of mid. You know, 2017, he had a 4.23 ERA in low A. 2018 in A ball, he had 4.4 ERA. He was starting to look better in 2019, you know, 3.87. You know, but mostly a starter. And he threw 116 innings in 2019. Now, of course, 2020 happened with COVID. There's no minor league system. He was not good enough to be on the Cubs taxi squad. So basically he took a year off, as so many guys did. And it didn't help him. So he came back in Double A in 2021, and he really wasn't very good. I mean, he threw 93 innings. He went 4-8, had a 5.32 ERA. His walk rate jumped up. He had typically been right around 3 walks per 9. He went up to 3.5. His Ks did go up too, so that was a sign that maybe he was working on something. And then in 22, he came back, and they had added a kind of change up his mix. They worked on his two-seamer and worked on the slider, and the slider played off the two-seamer really well. And that's when he started to really start to look a lot better. So he came back in Double A in 2022. He threw 71 innings and 14 starts, 2.51 ERA. Again, actually, that's when his strikeout rate jumped. I saw the wrong number before. He jumped up to 9.3 Ks per 9 innings. Walk rate bumped up a little bit, but was okay. And then when he went to Triple A, he really settled in. It was 7 starts, 36 innings, so small sample size warning. But, you know, he kept the 9 strikeouts per 9 innings, cut his walk rate basically in half to 1.7, and had a 2.95 ERA. And that's at the end of 2022 is when he got the call up to the bigs. So when he comes up, he's kind of this, you know, young baby face, chunky looking dude with weird glasses who doesn't look like an athlete. Like, I don't know. Let's give this guy a shot. Because at that point in 2022, they were taking a lot of fringe guys and saying, hey, can this guy be a dude? And that was a chance to kind of flow through a bunch of guys and see, is there something here that we're going to continue to work with, or are we going to move on and do other things? And he was impressive. He came up at the end of 2022 in the bigs, made 8 starts, threw 37 and 2/3 innings. A K rate was more back to what we see from Assad now, more like 7 Ks per 9, and his walk rate was jumped way up, 4.78, which was probably the big warning sign. That's one of the reasons why people were kind of down on him a little bit. Just too many base runners, too much trouble. But he managed to do all that to a 3.11 ERA. What's interesting as you look through, so 3.11 ERA, and then in 2023, split time between the majors and the minors, mostly in the bigs, but did have 4 starts in the minors, mostly earlier in the season. Yeah, 3.68 ERA. Again, back in the minors, 9.2 Ks per 9. But still with that 4.3 walks per 9. And in the bigs last year, you know, 109 innings, 32 appearances, 10 starts. Still, you know, 3.3 almost 3.4 walks per nine innings, giving up about a homer every nine innings. But he had a 3.05 ERA, and this year he's a 1.66. K number is right about where it's been, 7.34. Walks are down this year, down to 2.8, but still above much of what he had done in the minors for his career. And what's interesting is when you look at his expected ERA or his FIP, and these are ways to kind of combine what's actually happened with maybe what should happen or what the eyeball test maybe tells you. And so when he came up in 2022, you know, his expected ERA based on the contact he gave up and all that was 4.49, and he was 3.11. So that makes you naturally scream. He was lucky. You know, like he's not throwing hard. He's not fooling guys. He's not getting all that stuff. And when you look at his FIP and his expected FIP, you know, FIP is fielding independent pitching. So Javier Assad throws a lot of ground balls. And he's certainly benefited over the last year or so by the Cubs having a really good infield defense. So it makes sense that his ERA is below his fielding independent pitching, because they say basically if you take fielding out, what would a guy give up? If you have just league average fielding across the board, what would you give up? And, you know, his FIP was 4.49 and his expected FIP was almost 5. So in 2022, that's a guy that kind of screams lucky. And then you look at his numbers from last year, you know, 3.05 ERA, but an expected ERA of 4.64. And you look at the FIP and it's 4.29 compared to the 4.49 the year before. But now that gap's tightening up. So the expected FIP was 4.35. So basically his FIP was what it was expected to be. And so it's interesting that he had such a big gap between his ERA and his expected ERA. And there are reasons for that, but you can see some of these gaps kind of narrowing. And now this year, you know, his ERA is 1.66. He still has an expected ERA of 3.22. His FIP is 3.22, and his expected FIP is 4.15. And those are some of the reasons why people tend to think of him as lucky. Now, let me flip over and go to Baseball Savant. When you look at Baseball Savant, some of the things it gives you a lot of percentile rankings, and it kind of shows you how good a guy's stuff is, how good a guy's measured results are on the field, and measured not in terms of hits and walks and runs and Ks and all that, but this is things like expected ERA, expecting batting average against. It's giving you pitching motion, K rates, walk rates, exit velos, all that kind of stuff. And so when you look at Javier Assad from 2022, a lot of areas he doesn't qualify because he did not throw enough innings. But he had a pretty valuable fastball. So again, the fastball, especially that two-seamer, has always been probably his best pitch. And then when you look across the rest, you know, he's not a high velocity guy. You know, in 2022, he was 28th percentile in baseball for fastball velocity at an average velo of 92.6. In 2023, he's 29th percentile at 92.8. So like he's right around that same zone. He's going to consistently be about 92, 93. He'll bump it up a little bit occasionally. You know, extension, he's pretty decent on that, but that's not a huge major factor for a guy like Javi. What really pops out, and when you start looking at 2023 versus 2024, because there's more sample size, is in 2023, again, feeding into those reasons, all the expected ERA, FIP versus ERA, all that kind of stuff. The underlying reasons why, you know, he's got a really good sinker, he's got a good mix of pitches, he can keep guys off balance, but his breaking ball overall value was not super high last year. And the biggest reason for that is he doesn't fool hitters. Well, he kind of does. He doesn't fool hitters in the way that like strikeout pitchers do or any of that kind of thing. Last year, he was fourth percentile in baseball in chase rate. So that means he doesn't induce a lot of guys to swing outside the zone. And he was 11th percentile in whiff rate. So 11th percentile in getting guys to actually swing and miss. And when you're not getting chase, you're not getting whiff. That means a lot of balls put in play. That means you're relying heavily on your defense. And last year he was 78th percentile in average exit velocity, which means, you know, he was pretty good. His average contact given up was about 87.5 miles an hour. A lot of ground balls. He was 74th percentile in baseball in ground ball rate. Does not give up a lot of barrels. So barrels is a specific measurement. I think it is 95 miles an hour exit velo or higher with a 21 degree launch angle. You guys can correct me on that. 36th percentile on hard hit rate. So he's a guy who gets by on weak contact. And that is often something seen in kind of what we see with Adbert, right? Like he's not a high strikeout closer. So he relies on balls in play. So there are days where, especially as you shrink that sample size. So for Adbert, he's trying to get through one inning with a one run lead. Now he's given up too many home runs. So that's been an issue for him too, dealing with lefties. But like that inning against the Brewers, he gave up some cheap hits. But when you're relying on contact, that brings that BABIP luck factor into play. You know, you give up a couple flares, they're hits. So without the whiff, without the chase, you know, he's 33rd percentile in K rate, 30th percentile in walk rate, which is actually not that bad. It's a little, it's below average, but it's not awful. But when you're giving up a lot of contact, you're going to give up a lot of weak hits, at least a certain number of weak hits, and you're going to tend to put guys on base with the walk. And one thing we've seen with Javier Assad is he will pitch himself into trouble sometimes. That's who he is. It's what he does. He's also really good at getting out of it. And part of it is getting ground ball double plays, all that kind of thing. And then this year, comparing last year to this year, you know, his overall pitching value has been amazing. Like his numbers are off the charts this year. His fastball run value is 99th percentile in baseball. And that sinker is really working for him. He was 97th last year. You know, this year his breaking ball run value and his off-speed run value are up to 75th and 71st percentile. So those have gone from below average pitches to above. And we'll see over time, you know, as the sample size gets bigger, if that holds as a sticky change or whether, you know, he's just off to a really good start. But either way, like that fastball is right where it's been. His command is right where it's been. He's shown in the past, you know, he's also a guy who doesn't seem to ever get flustered by the moment. You know, he can pitch himself into trouble and look just as calm getting out of it as he does during an easy 1-2-3 inning. You know, in the World Baseball Classic, he was really good. Like he went through the entire American or US Team USA lineup, and I think only Mike Trout got a hit off him. And he's just he doesn't look imposing. He doesn't, even if you watch his stuff doesn't blow you away. He's not making guys look stupid. He just gets outs. He just gets outs consistently. Now this year, his whiff rate has gone from 11th percentile to 6th percentile. So it's even more down. What he is getting more of right now, and again, we'll see if this is sticky, is instead of being 4th percentile in baseball for chase rate, he's actually pretty close to a league average of 48th percentile. So he's right in the middle of the pack there. His fastball velo has actually fallen off a little bit this year, which hasn't seemed to hurt him at all. He's down to 17th percentile at 91.7, which is about a mile an hour slower than what he was throwing last year. And again, we'll see. It's been cold, so maybe that's something that will come back up. But he doesn't have an above-average fastball anyway, so it doesn't really matter. And I don't think he's lost a ton on it. You know, his expected batting average, expected ERA are way down this year. Still giving up right about the same rate, you know, 35% barrel rate. He's a little bit better on hard hit rate. So, you know, last year he gave up a few too many barrels. He gave up a few too many hard hit. He was 29th percentile in barrel rate last year, 36th percentile in hard hit rate. Now he's actually above average in hard hit rate. He's only given up, he's 67th percentile. You know, 36% of his contact is considered hard hit. Barrel rate's pretty consistent. His ground ball rate's down a little bit. So that's, again, we'll see if that's small sample size or if that's playing out. But on the whole, like his stuff doesn't scream out at you. So when you break down what he throws his two-seamer, his sinker, about 30% of the time, averages about 91, 92 miles an hour. He goes to his cutter about 25% of the time. That's about 88 miles an hour. His four-seamer, he throws about another 25% of the time. That's around 92. And then he works that slider in, throws that about 10% of the time. And then he does a little bit of curveball changeup mix in, you know, 6-7%. And when you look at those pitches, you know, where he gives up the barrels, you know, if you look at his pitch charts, you know, he's really pretty good. Like he doesn't miss up with the slider very often. His fastball is right around the plate, and that gets him ahead of a lot of hitters. When you look at his, you know, the zones where he tends to throw him the most, he does not leak a lot of stuff middle. He's typically low and into a righty with a cutter, typically up and into a righty with a four-seamer. No, sorry, with the cutter. You know, the four-seamer, he'll move all over the place. A lot of times up and in or up and away to a lefty, you know, down in, down down into a lefty, down away to a righty. Hits the spots pretty well. His slider is pretty consistently low and into a righty, low and away to a lefty. That's been a really good pitch for him. That pitch gets beaten into the ground a lot. Typically keeps his curveball down. His changeup is a little bit more scattershot, but he doesn't throw it nearly as often. And when you look at his comps, his similar pitchers to him in terms of velocity and movement, you're looking at like Anthony DeSclafani, 2023 Chase Anderson, 2023 Colin Ray, this year's Miles Michaelis. Like, those are guys who I've seen over the years, and like, how is this guy any good? You know, DeSclafani for years would shut the Cubs down. Like, he just doesn't look like a good pitcher. Colin Ray's bounced around, but Miles Michaelis, hated Cardinal. And if you look at, you can also, on Baseball Savant, look for comps by speed and movement. And when you look at it that way, or sorry, by hitting profile. And there he's got a lot of similarities to Joe Ross and Andrew Heaney. So, you know, he's got comps with guys who are established major league pitchers and have had nice careers. And the stuff just plays. You know, you look back from 2022 through now, and he's always been sinker heavy. Cutter is his number two, and four seamer is his number three. Last year, he really increased the use of the slider. He went up, threw it about 50% more than he had in the past. Now he's back down closer to 10% with the slider. We'll see if that holds. The curveball and changeup, you know, he used to throw the changeup more than the curve. Now he throws the curve more than the changeup, and the use of those pitches are increasing, which is nice. It gives him a nice six-pitch mix, and it allows him to work hitters in a lot of different ways. But he's still, you know, largely sinker, cutter, four-seamer are his primaries, with his slider as his, you know, number one go-to after that. And when you look at the pitch tracking, I mean, against righties, he's very sinker-heavy. It doesn't throw that as much to the lefties. Lefties, he goes a lot more four-seam. Curveball is primarily for lefties. The changeup is exclusively to lefties. And, you know, everything else is, the cutter's pretty balanced. And he doesn't give the lefties the slider very often. So that gives him good mixes to go against both handed profiles. And when you get into the raw stats on the pitches, they're not big movers. Like, he doesn't have big induced vertical break like Shota Ibunaga does on his fastball. He doesn't have elite. His cutter has above average movement. His slider is good. He's got above average horizontal movement on his slider. He's got about 6 inches horizontal movement more than the average slider. So that's a really good pitch for him. But really, he's just effective. He'll throw most of those pitches in any count. He's got clear ways of attacking each handedness of hitter, and he's just consistent. And he just gets outs. And I think, you know, he's a guy that I think at this point we have to believe it. I mean, you look at his overall stat profile, and he is, you know, at the major league level, he's up over 180 career innings at this point. He's made 25 starts. He's pitched in almost 50 games, and he's pretty consistent with that roughly 7.5 strikeouts per nine, 3.5 walks per nine. Hopefully he can continue to work on pulling that down, but he's got a career ERA of 2.77. You know, there may be some, you know, the league will continue to work on trying to figure him out, but now this is over the course of three seasons. And in 2022, at the end of that season, he was new. He was a rookie. Teams were looking at him. There wasn't much of a book. I don't know how much people necessarily even invested in developing a book on him. But last year, he threw 109 innings. You know, that's almost 110 big league innings. And there does start to be a book. Guys do know what to expect. And now this year, he's thrown another 38 innings and is looking really good. Like, he may still trend back to some extent. I don't know what the sort of norm Javier Assad is, but I know it's a guy who can get outs in the major leagues at a consistent level. I know it's a guy who, certainly the way he's throwing this year, deserves to stay in the starting rotation. But at this point, it's not just about what you deserve. I mean, I've even as recently as 2-3 weeks ago, I maybe did sit here on the show, I can't remember, I would have talked about, no, when guys start coming back, I want Ben Brown or I want Hayden Wesneski to go back to Iowa to stay stretched out as starters, because there's value in a young guy building up that ability to work 150, 170 innings over a season. But I think there's time to make that up later. And at this point, I think we are more at a point where it's about, what do the Cubs need this season to contend, compete, and be good than it is just about let's make Ben Brown the best starting pitcher he can be for the longest amount of time. And there's a fine line there, because the Cubs are in business to win. Well, they're in business to make money, because that's what businesses do. But they're in business to compete at the major league level. And so as part of that, you want to develop your players to the best of your ability. On the other hand, though, there are times where sometimes you just need a guy to come up and fill a role. And plenty of guys have done this and succeeded. So I'm not, you know, Ben Brown, if he winds up in the bullpen for the rest of the season, or Hayden Wesneski winds up in the bullpen for the rest of the season, it doesn't permanently impact their ability to be a starting pitcher. It doesn't mean they can't ever do it. But right now, those innings are way more valuable to the Cubs being thrown in the 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th at the major league level for the Chicago Cubs than they are starting games for the Iowa Cubs right now. And I think the difficult decision they're going to have when Wicks and Hendricks both come back is, does Assad go to the bullpen and let Wicks start, or does Assad stay as a starter? Now, in that particular case, I think, at least to start with, I would probably send Wicks down to Iowa and let him continue to start. Wicks could throw out of the pen, but at some point, you know, I guess we'll see what happens with Richard Lovelady. We'll see when or if, you know, when Smiley's able to come back. Having Wicks in the bullpen would not be the worst thing either, but I think he's more classically a starter. Although, I mean, he could certainly get outs. But I would probably keep him stretched out, send him to Iowa, keep Assad in the rotation. But Assad is a guy who's shown he can do it. So if Wesneski or Brown struggle in that role, then maybe, you know, Wicks does come up, take that starting rotation role, put Assad in the bullpen because he's shown he can do it. But he's a very valuable pitcher. He's a guy who's certainly a legitimate major league arm. I mean, there's no doubt about that. And you know, his worst season in the majors so far is a 3.11 ERA and limited experience in 2022. He's continued to get better the longer he's been up. And it's almost like the more people see him, the less hard they hit him, which is wild given the stuff he has. But I've gone on maybe too long for this episode. Thank you for sticking with me. It's, you know, it's going to be a big couple weeks still for the Cubs. The Cubs have tough schedules coming up through May. You know, I said before the season started, if they get through May and they're basically 500, they're going to be in really good shape. And so far, they're doing a really good job of weathering the injuries, staying afloat. You know, they've not had long stretches of losing. You know, they've had some stretches where they've lost 3-4, 4-5, but they've not put together a long losing streak. Now, they haven't really had a long winning streak either. I think 4 games is their top winning streak. They've had a couple of those. But, you know, they go through this. They got the San Diego series facing a bunch of tough starters this week. They had Yu Darvish last night. They beat Freddy Peralta on Saturday. Today's, they're facing a rookie, so it maybe isn't quite so scary on paper. And they've got Dylan Cease on Wednesday against Hayden Wesneski. And then they face Pittsburgh. Paul Skeens might make his major league debut. And then really, really from May 10th to May 23rd, they've got 14 games all against Pittsburgh and Atlanta. They go to Pittsburgh and Atlanta, and then they come home to face Pittsburgh and Atlanta, which I hate when Major League Baseball does that. So they're going to play all 7 of their games against the Braves within a 12-day time span, which is nuts. 11-day time span, whatever. And then they've got the Cardinals, and then a 4-gamer with Milwaukee to end the series, or basically end the month before opening a series with Cincinnati on the 31st. And so that's not going to be an easy stretch. I mean, Atlanta's really good. Pittsburgh's been playing well. St. Louis is St. Louis. We'll see what that rivalry does. And then 4 at Milwaukee. It'll be the first time that Craig Counsell goes to Milwaukee. But, you know, they played their way to 6-over. Last year, they weren't 7-over until August 24th. And they've been there already this year. So they're well ahead of last year. And one thing they never did last year was we talked a lot last year about missed opportunities and playing in the margins and all those kinds of things and how those missed opportunities add up. Well, this year, they're getting a little bit more done. They're still not as good as we want them to be. They really probably should be 4 or 5 games better than they actually are. But we also have to remember they've stolen some games they probably didn't deserve to win too. I mean, they were getting no hit into the 8th inning and won a game. They've had some comebacks. So it's not just that every win they've gotten was perfectly earned and fully expected, and every loss has been a giant pile of garbage. But they're making it through, and they're giving themselves some space to have some of the struggles, you know. They're absorbing, they're doing all this with a poor bullpen. They're doing all this right now with offensively, maybe we'll get into that more next week, but offensively they are largely above average, but because they, in the beginning of the season when Seiya Suzuki was healthy and Cody Bellinger was healthy, they were scoring a lot of runs. Now with those guys out of the lineup and Michael Busch struggling to kind of readjust to major league hitters or major league pitchers, Ian Happ slumping, you know, the offense is kind of pulled back in, which has put more pressure on the bullpen. But, you know, early in the season, the starters weren't going deep, so the bullpen was getting stretched, and they were winning when they scored a bunch. Now the starting pitching is a lot better, going a little bit deeper, but the offense isn't scoring as much, which still puts pressure on that bullpen. So either way, the pen has to get better, but the more they can hit and have starting pitching at the same time, or more the, at some point, the starting pitching is not going to stay this hot, and they're going to back off a little bit. And at that point, the bullpen's going to have to pick up some slack, and so is the offense. You know, while I do fully believe that any pitcher on a major league roster should have the ability to hold a one-run lead, you just can't consistently be taking, you know, one-run leads to the seventh and expect them to hold. And the Cubs did win a 1-0 game against the Mets, but that's not typical. You typically need to score 3, 4, 5 or more to win. And so if you're consistently scoring one, you're just not going to win a lot of games. And we can be mad at the bullpen all we want, but if the team's only scoring 0, 1, 2, 3 runs, you're not going to win a lot of those ball games. That's just how baseball works. But we'll see what happens in the next week. I'm looking forward to seeing Shota tonight. I love watching that dude pitch. He's so much fun. If you haven't watched him, do it. If you have, really lock into his expressions. You know, I love watching him on and off the field between innings. I love watching him after a big play, whether even if he does gives up a hit or something, or gives up a close one. You know, he's very expressive on the mound, and he's just a joy and just fun to watch. So stay tuned. Hopefully we'll talk again soon and the Cubs will be more than 500. But for right now, they're doing what they have to do. They're treading water. They're keeping themselves in the race. They're tied for first place with Milwaukee. And given all the injuries, that's about the most I could hope for right now. Thank you for joining me today. If you like this episode, please drop a rating and a review wherever it is you get your podcasts and share an episode with a friend. Just a few seconds from you gives me great feedback and helps other Cub fans find the show. You can find me on Twitter, X, Instagram, TikTok, Threads, Blue Sky, and YouTube, all at CubsPS Plus. And check out the Patreon page at patreon.com/CubsPS Plus to help support the show. As always, the theme music for this podcast is Prospect Park West by Jerry McCoy. This is Mike Waller, host of the Cubs PS Plus podcast. Every day with Cubs baseball or talking about Cubs baseball is a great day. Go Cubs!